Dr. Kelly Matthews joined Wells Fargo as an economist in 2000 when First Security Corporation merged with Wells Fargo Bank. He had served as First Security's chief economist for 27 years. Dr. Matthews is responsible for local, regional, and national economic analysis and forecasting for Wells Fargo Bank. He's also the Wells Fargo Government Affairs Officer in Utah. His research and opinions are widely read by the financial and business community, and he is regularly quoted in newspapers, radio, television, and other news coverage. He is here today to share his views and forecast of the economy. We'd like to welcome Dr. Matthews.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for your interest in being here today. I would like to start with you thinking about what was going in your mind a year ago when we went through that September that sort of shook the world. And now think about where we are today and whether or not we have improved, accomplished, solidified some of those things, those fears that we were attempting to figure out a year ago. Those are some of the issues that I would quickly like to chat with you about today. The first thing that I would like to you to think about, as perhaps you recall some of the thoughts and feelings that we were experiencing a year ago, is a comment that President Obama made in a speech the other day when, in talking about what his impression had been achieved during this year, he used the word that we had stepped back from the brink. And that's kind of an interesting word. What does it mean that we have stepped back from the brink? The first thing that you should understand, perhaps, in understanding what he may have meant, is the difference between a deflationary credit crunch deflation and either a mild or severe or run-of-the-mill kind of recession. Most of our experience of the first kind, a deflationary credit crunch deflation, most of us learned through a textbook when we read about the Great Depression of the 30s. Maybe we talked to our parents. Maybe we had some explanation by those who may have lived through that near decade-long, maybe even longer than a decade experience of what it was really like. We gained a little bit more understanding of what that kind of phenomenon was when we watched Japan melt down in the early 1980s and get caught in a deflationary credit crunch that lasted specifically for another decade, and to some degree, real estate prices and in Tokyo, the Nikkei Dow maybe hasn't totally even recovered very much even now in the second decade after that deflationary meltdown. So it's a little bit more than just a hypothetical situation that an economy could get caught in that deflationary trap. And that was what the big worry was a year ago, that we were heading headlong into such a situation. I wish that we had 4 or 5 hours. We maybe could discuss all of the programs that have been attempted to be implemented as a way of addressing this situation. But I guess, while obviously some of us would agree or disagree with some of the things that have been done, but it appears that it is a fair assessment today to state that the prospects, the possibility, even the likelihood that we are going to find ourselves in one of those mired deflationary credit crunches has probably passed. That does not imply, however, that there are still some potential recessionary kind of elements that are still very evident out there, and some of the aspects relating to credit analysis, credit availability, dealing with excess debt, whether it's individual, business, or government, some of those elements that oftentimes are heavily involved in a deflationary credit crunch spiral downward are still somewhat evident. But I would suggest to you that, in fact, President Obama's analysis that we have stepped back from that brink And certainly a huge part of it may have been the Federal Reserve monetary policies. I mean, who of you thought that you might? Do any of you remember your elementary economics class when you were talking about Keynesian analysis and a liquidity trap? Remember that? Maybe you forgot about all that stuff. But who would have ever thought that we were maybe on the brink of experiencing some of that kind of situation rather than just reading about it that had been our typical situation? And so today then, where do we find ourselves after a year? We've now lived basically a year since Wall Street essentially melted down. Bear Stearns had probably already collapsed, but there in a period of about a week, we went through Lehman Brothers, Merrill Lynch, AIG, Fannie and Freddie. It was a horrendous situation. And now we find ourselves a year down the road. How do we interpret this? In the last 3 or 4 months, if we focus on the early March position of the stock market, we are up some 50% in the last few months relative to those early March lows. Conversely, and maybe you want to quickly glance in sort of in the center of this Wells Fargo page, you will see those two lines that relate to total jobs or unemployment rate. You'll see that conversely, the employment number suggests that we continue to lose jobs in our country and that the unemployment rate nationwide, which currently stands at 9.7, we anticipate will get up to 10% or higher and will likely remain that way through essentially all of next year. How do we view these sort of seemingly contradictory circumstances where, on one sense, the stock market seems to be doing very, very well, and at the same time, we seem to be mired in what would appear to be a very serious and deep jobs-type recession? A couple of quick ideas to maybe help you understand that situation. Certainly, it's easy to understand, I think, that the stock market may have been overdone by a panic sell-off, and accordingly, there was undoubtedly going to be some bounce back. It's important, however, for you to realize that a fair amount of those improved second quarter earnings that helped propel some of that third quarter increase in the stock market were achieved by cost containment, reduced costs, rather than top-line revenue growth from increased sales or increased demand activity out there in whatever it is we happen to be dealing with. And so, yes, indeed, cost containment, which implied a fair amount of reduced employment, certainly helped sustain profitability in the second quarter, and more than likely will also help somewhat in the third quarter, but with the possible exception of the cash for clunkers idea, which certainly had some impact in terms of actually increasing sales and demand, we haven't made that sort of transition from the impact of Federal Reserve stimulus and to some degree Treasury or government stimulus programs as a source of helping to sustain the economy. We haven't really made that transition, in my opinion, to where the economy is beginning to grow because people are wanting to buy more, demand more, which would necessitate companies beginning to expand inventories rather than contract inventories. If you look on sort of what is it, the fifth line down from the top, you can see the inventory line, and those declining inventory positions act on a GDP accounting-wise just like negative investment. And so at some point, if this economy is going to recover, we have to turn that around and actually start accumulating inventories. And if you look, you can see that, at least in our forecast, the inventory accumulation is really not anticipated to begin in any way until somewhat into mid next year. Okay, what about this situation What are some things you can think about in understanding the employment-unemployment situation? And again, hopefully you've looked at that line and you can see that our expectation is that we're likely going to remain in that 10% unemployment rate vein through most of next year. Why is that likely to happen? Well, for a couple of reasons. If you look up at that top row, and yes, you can see positive numbers we anticipate are going to begin in the second half of this year, but on through next year, real GDP in our expectation might be somewhere only in the 2% range. That is very modest and extremely disappointing to come out of a very deep recession area and have only 2% real growth. That would suggest that if that's really all the growth that we're having, and part of that being contributed by the fact that we are no longer having negative inventory change, so that's accounting for some modest part of that growth, that in fact we are going to have a disappointingly ongoing demand from the consumer and business sector simply in how much goods and services get purchased in this economy. So even though we're anticipating a positive growth environment, it probably will be disappointingly slow in the aggregate sense. What that means then for jobs in particularly is that many companies, if in fact demand is going to be disappointingly slow, many companies, even if they have to expand output modestly, will be able to primarily meet that increased demand through increased productivity gains rather than necessitate some renewed hiring. And so both the impact of being able to use productivity gains as well as continue the cost containment is likely to explain why this situation of unemployment is likely to go be disappointingly difficult on into next year. I was interested, this is the headline in Sunday's Salt Lake Tribune when they were talking about the August Utah jobs data. The headline says, "Jobs gone for good? Question mark." So what I've tried to suggest to you is that yes, we have stepped away from that deflationary credit crunch brink, but unfortunately, we are still essentially caught in an aspect of a recessionary environment, which means that it will be disappointingly slow as we begin to rehire and to reignite consumer demand, which then would, of course, lead to greater output. One quick other thing, I don't have time to explain this thoroughly, but it's important on this front page also to understand where the Fed is in this whole process and what's going to happen to interest rates and inflation as we go forward. You all are aware that, of course, as part of how we stepped away from the brink was that the Fed basically flooded the economy with liquidity. And, of course, we have short-term interest rates down about to zero. We have an upward sloping yield curve, which makes it pretty easy for banks or whomever's dealing in financial services to borrow short and lend in a longer vein and make a nice spread on that area. And so certainly the Fed has done its part, some would argue overdone its part, but in helping us to move away from that brink. The question is whether or not the Fed, if you heard Bernanke's testimony yesterday at the end of the Fed meeting, is basically, and it's pretty clear to everyone, that the main aspect of the Fed is still focused on that unemployment aspect of the weakness of the economy. They do not want to make the mistakes which they deemed that our government made in the 1930s or Japan in the 1980s, where they begin to remove the stimulus and in effect raise interest rates too soon. The Fed is worried about making that mistake. And we're also, you know, we don't want that either. But at the same time, we look out there in the marketplace today and realize if you have any understanding of what's happened to the Fed balance sheet or the magnitude of debt that we are talking about. It's just beyond anything that we have ever imagined, and realizing that at some point it will be inevitable that we end up with some economic difficulties, whether it's an inflation or a stagflation or something, unless the Fed gets it right in terms of removing the amount of excess liquidity when and if the domestic economy begins to improve. Some of the early signals of worry about this would be the gold price, which yesterday was teetering around 1,019-ish, the declining value of the dollar, which arguably the Fed and the Treasury might say we're better off to have some weakness in the dollar, which will strengthen our ability to export. But it's clear that the markets, particularly some of those markets reflecting the worries of China and the rest of the world, which we are relying upon absorbing that incredible amount of debt that we're issuing, that we ended up with a significant weakness in our currency. There's no way that we can avoid having a sharp increase in interest rates, which would, of course, affect the mortgage market, a sharp increase in oil prices, which, of course, would affect consumer demand, as it did last year in terms of gasoline prices. We're sort of teetering on that balance, and let's hope that the Fed knows what they're doing and gets it right in terms of keeping enough stimulus long enough, but not too much so that we end up with either a stagflation or outright inflation that we've sort of had a little bit of experience with in earlier times. Let me show you just a couple of things relating to the Utah economy. You can't see, of course, from this the month-to-month-to-month data, but you can sort of see what's happened in the two halves on the right-hand side for this current year as it would relate to the economy. Let me just make two quick comments, first about jobs, second about housing, as to where we are right now. On the third row down, the non-agricultural employment, you can see that we had those three fabulous years, 05, 06, 07, and actually we were the best economy in the United States, the best that had ever been in Utah. And now, of course, we find ourselves in a jobs recession that is significantly worse. Those of you who lived through the dot-com situation of 01, 02, 03, we basically had 3 years in Utah where essentially we had no net job growth. But the worst that it was in 02 was that we sort of lost a net employment base of about 8,000. That's about as bad as it was. Guess where we are today? In August, we are now down 4.5% and 55,000 jobs down in terms of where we were a year ago. I would have never thought that it would be that bad here in Utah based on my understanding of the local economy. So we are again facing something somewhat similar. Of course, the magnitude, if you look on the unemployment rate, we still are being told that our unemployment rate is only 6%. Nationally, as I mentioned, we're 9.7. So in many respects, we still are much better than the national average. But I would tell you that I hope at this level of lost employment that that's as bad as it gets. If that happens to be true, that that's as bad as it gets now in the second half of this year, it's once again going to be a slow, local process for the same reasons that I went through a moment ago in relation to the national that will make it difficult for us to, as it were, get back up to the zero line where we have stopped losing jobs, and that may take on into the first part of next year before we actually get to that zero line and then very slowly potentially begin to modestly add a few growth jobs. So I would anticipate, though, while we're continue to be much better than the national average, we're going to follow a somewhat similar pattern as it would relate to the employment picture. Now, as it would relate to the housing situation, and you have that line there called single-family building permits. Just quickly look at the difference between the 05 number of nearly 21,000 single-family building permits, and then add the two halves together that you have there for 09. And if you get something like a 4.747,000 when you add those two together, take the percentage change from 05, we're down some 75 to 78% from the peak in terms of residential construction. And so the first thing to note is that as much as half of those lost jobs or reduced employment that we've been talking about were related to the residential construction industry in one way or another. And so the first piece of news that I would suggest to you, and while you can sort of see from the numbers you have in front of you, if you had the actual monthly detail, you could see that over the last 4 months, I think we could make the case that we have stopped falling in terms of reduced residential construction. Now, that doesn't sound very exciting to stop falling, but that's the first step in order to recover. You've got to stop going down. And I think that we can make that case both in terms of the numbers of homes being built, in fact, the number of homes being sold. Residential real estate sales have also stopped falling. So in the last 2 or 3 months, I would argue that those two key indicators maybe have stabilized, surely stabilized at a very low level. The two areas that have not yet stabilized in housing, one is the foreclosure area. In the last 2 months, it was the worst that it had been, and it might continue to get somewhat worse as we move through the second half of this year. So we still have that problem to work our way through. And without explaining all about conforming mortgages, those homes that are too big for conforming mortgages, over, say, over $500,000 or something like that, I think there's still a fair amount of price decline that is ahead of us in those jumbo mortgage areas. They haven't reduced prices enough yet to get them sold. The last point, though, that I would stress to you is that the underlying affordability, which takes the whole marketplace, the average sales price of everything, the income, the interest rate, I initially thought a year ago that it might take an average sales price decline of 20% in order to restore affordability. We have had on an average sales price decline along the Wasatch Front about a 12% decline in average sales prices. But at the same time, when the Fed was reducing short-term interest rates last year, they also initiated a program near the end of last year where they started to actually buy mortgage-backed securities and inject money into the long-term end of the market. And hence, mortgage rates dropped from the 6.25% down to 5%, and maybe some of you have had the opportunity to refinance below 5%. Hopefully some of you did that. But the combination of a 10 to 12% average sales price decline along with mortgage rates dropping from the 6.25% down to 5-ish, the combination of those two, even if you're using a very conservative income estimate, affordability along the Wasatch Front has been returned to the same levels that existed in 04, which basically was good enough to sustain the marketplace. So I will just end with you in this situation. As you know, in any particular market, what's good for one side of the market might be difficult for the other side of the market. We understand that. But if you happen to have, if you or someone that you know has a relatively solid job and you need a new or improved or enlarged home, in my opinion, this opportunity to buy today is actually not only the best it's been for many years, it might be the best in a generation. Who would have thought that we could get basically a fixed rate mortgage at 5% with less than $100 per square foot in terms of cost of building that house? I mean, it's a incredible opportunity. So once again, I think in understanding what we heard from our previous speaker is that there are chances and opportunities out there to help a lot of people and solidify their financial position for many, many years to come as we work our way through what is obviously a very difficult housing and overall economic environment. Thank you very much.